You're listening to Meeting Pod, the podcast powered by Meeting Place, the premier magazine and news source for the meat and poultry processing industry, and Alt Meat Magazine, the only business information resource for the exploding alternative meat industry. Today's Meeting Pod episode is sponsored by Fusion Tech. Welcome, I'm Chris Scott, host of Meeting Pod and contributing editor at Meeting Place and Alt Meat Magazines. In this week's episode, we're going to discuss a major USDA commitment to open regional business centers around the country with the goal of providing localized support that will improve links between producers, wholesalers, and distributors. The program also aims to provide technical assistance to help producers access new markets with a focus on underserved farmers, ranchers, and food businesses. Our guest today is Dr. Glenda Humiston, Vice President of the Agriculture and Natural Resources Department at the University of California, which is one of the institutions that will manage one of the 12 regional business centers. Dr. Humiston has more than 25 years of experience in public policy development and program implementation supporting sustainability. She also produced a widely acclaimed guidebook on access to capital and has led efforts to bring rural ag-related issues to economic boards and other policymakers in the Golden State. Thanks for spending some time with us today, Glenda.
Thanks. I'm really thrilled to be here with you.
As are we. Now, before we get into a discussion about this major USDA program to establish these 12 regional food business centers, can you describe for our Meeting Pod audience your background at USDA and your experience working on public policy development and program implementation in California?
Yeah, actually, my earliest experiences were as a very active 4-H member, which actually is a USDA program.
Yes, it is.
Many people know that, which got me very interested in the kind of work I do now. In fact, it was a large part of the reason I'm in this kind of position. As far as specifically working with USDA, I was appointed by President Clinton the last 3 years of his administration as Deputy Undersecretary for Natural Resources and Environment. I had spent much of the previous 10 years doing a great deal of work on conservation, environmental issues, and really trying to build bridges between the agricultural and environmental communities on ecosystem services and conservation policy. When I returned from that, I was very interested in sustainability, what it meant and what it would look like for farm policy. So I somewhat reluctantly decided to pursue a PhD, which I did complete looking at U.S. Farm Bill policy, and just completed that in time to accept an appointment from President Obama to serve as the State Director of Rural Development for USDA here in California, where I really had the opportunity to bring together my previous work on environmental issues with economic development and, you know, community development. So it was a fantastic experience.
Sounds like, and makes you the perfect person to answer some questions we have about this new program. Now, the USDA is investing $400 million to establish the business centers that aim to help farmers, ranchers, and other food operations access new markets and better utilize local resources. How do you see this program achieving these goals as the program's offerings eventually launch?
Well, I can't speak for all of the regions, but for our region, we're very excited that what we did in putting our proposal together was really look around our four states and identify existing programs that had a proven track record. You know, they had success. They clearly had figured out how to meet some needs, make some things work. And what we proposed was to understand them better, scale them up, replicate them around the region, and share a lot of best practices that we could then do continuous improvement on. You know, a couple examples of those are work at the local level of leveraging school districts or food banks to serve as aggregation hubs. Some of the regional food strategy development on how to create jobs and economic development. One of my favorites is actually out of the city of Los Angeles, whose Los Angeles Food Policy Council later created this good food purchasing program that is literally an international model of how institutions and large cities, even small cities, can use the power of procurement to support their local farmers. And I could keep naming off examples, but those are just a couple of them.
And those are solid examples, exactly. Now, USDA says one of the goals of the regional business centers is to help smaller meat industry players, including livestock operations and small processors, better navigate regulatory and other challenges they have faced so far without such focused federal support. Where do you see the program is helping most effectively, considering the current state of post-pandemic food production?
Yeah, well, first of all, we got a briefing this morning from the Ag Marketing Service, USDA, at our California Department of Food and Ag. And one thing they made very, very clear is that this particular grant program, these regional business centers, will not be utilized for meat and the livestock sector. And the reason that is because they have actually placed a great deal of money, equivalent amount actually, in several other grant programs that do target that, such as their local meat capacity grant program, the meat and poultry processing expansion program. There's a local meat capacity grant program to help small producers, a program to help meat and poultry inspection readiness grants for folks, and then actually an indigenous animals harvesting and meat processing grant. There may be a few more, but that's just the ones I'm aware of.
Well, another aspect of the program involves establishing or developing relationships between urban and rural ag stakeholders so that the nation can move forward creating a more diversified and resilient food system. Have there been other efforts from federal agencies that have aimed to achieve similar goals in recent years?
Yeah, actually, this particular regional business center, in my mind, is part of an evolution that really is built upon previous activities that have allowed us to learn lessons and improve how we're delivering. You know, for example, several years ago, USDA published a book on examples of how people were doing regional food hubs, you know, utilizing different infrastructure to make that happen for small, medium, and even large scale. And we're going to be using all those different scales here. We've also been building upon programs such as, again, several years ago, the White House did a manufacturing communities partnership. We here in California put together a proposal that was 28 of our counties focusing on food and beverage manufacturing. And what I loved about that is it really was the first time we tried to build the entire ecosystem around food processing and food-related businesses. So, you know, really look at workforce and access to capital and infrastructure and supply chains and the research and innovation and have all those players at the table talking to each other on how we could really expand and enhance food and beverage manufacturing. Mm-hmm. We're using a lot of lessons from that in what we're going to be doing in delivering on this regional business center.
And that's important to take those lessons learned and move them forward with new programs as they arrive.
Well, it is, because I have to say, one of my pet peeves in trying to deliver these kind of programs is when we try to reinvent the wheel or duplicate what's already out there. It just is a huge waste of resources, and that's something we're particularly paying attention to not doing.
And it might potentially limit what you can actually achieve, given the time frame that you want to have things happen.
Exactly.
Let's take a quick break for a message from today's sponsor, Fusion Tech.
Improving yields and consistency is possible in a Fusion Tech smokehouse. Our patented airflow technology allows you to set the location and duration of the oven breakpoint, meaning you can reduce the amount of overcooked and undercooked product on each rack. The result? Our customers have seen up to a 10% increase in yields, up to a 28% increase in consistency, and up to a 35% decrease in cook time over their previous oven. Improve yields and consistency across your product. Learn more and request a quote at https.ftiinc.org/ovens. Now back to the podcast.
And we're back with Dr. Glenda Humiston from the Agricultural and Natural Resources Department at the University of California. Now, in addition to the Regional Food Business Centers program, USDA also is committing an additional $420 million to launch a resilient food systems infrastructure program that's designed to help strengthen the supply chain and support existing local and regional food systems. Is this the type of initiative that a federal entity can launch and then state agencies can enhance over time?
This is exactly the kind of initiative a federal entity can launch and just did launch. We actually have the cooperative agreements in place just in the last few days with our state agencies. In this particular case, what USDA did is they went out and did cooperative agreements with state departments of food and agriculture to administer this program. And it's designed specifically to complement the regional food business support centers. So the food business support center that my organization is administering is about helping the farm and food business folks in their economic activities, their business activities, whereas this one is really focused on facilities, infrastructure, equipment, etc. And you really need both. But what's nice about having your State Department of Food and Ag working on this is that then allows you to tap into state government and local government. When you're talking infrastructure, that's going to be key for permitting and, you know, making projects move forward in a timely manner.
Now, so far, these USDA regional food business centers are most likely to will be run by prominent ag schools and related organizations like the Region 5 Development Commission and the Georgia Minority Outreach Network, for example. Can you give our listeners an idea of how you see this type of management structure working once the program is up and running?
You know, actually, I think the beauty of this program and the way USDA managed it in having proposals come in, and then they themselves negotiated with all of us proposers, because they realized when they saw the initial documents that instead of creating 5 or 6 of these centers, they could literally create 12 that would cover the entire U.S., all 50 states, our territories, the islands, etc.
Yep.
So what they've done is, because actually our funding and our 4 states is a little different than we initially submitted, which is probably true for everybody else that's a center now. We did a little tweaking, a little shifting around so that we could cover everybody. And everybody is organizing themselves slightly differently. For myself, I love communities of practice where people share best practices. So as we are implementing in our structure, we'll be doing some great work, but we'll also be learning as we're doing it. If we can share that with other regional food business centers and they can share their lessons with us, at the end of the day, all of us are going to be much more effective and productive in how we do this.
Absolutely. Now, this ambitious regional program also involves providing business builder grants and is designed to reach all or part of, as you said, the 48 continental United States, in addition to American Samoa, Alaska, Guam, Hawaii, the Marianas Islands, Puerto Rico, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Having coordinated public policy and program implementation in your career, what potential hurdles do you think this type of structure could run into once the program begins operations?
That's a really fascinating question. I'm not sure I have a great answer to that because, again, we've designed something we think is going to work. And I have to say, the Ag Marketing Service at USDA has turned around the contracts on these in an amazingly short time period. They've been available to answer questions. You know, basically, a lot of the things that were hurdles previously in trying to set up something like this, I feel like USDA's learned their lessons and they're really, really interested in trying to make this successful. So they've made people available to us. They've had workshops. They're available for office hours. I'm hoping we're not going to see too many of those hurdles. If we do, then I think we'll have meetings with USDA and figure out how to make it work, whatever that takes.
So once again, lines of communication with AMS and with USDA and between all the centers is going to be critical in maintaining this consistency.
Exactly, and not just AMS. I mean, for this program to truly be successful, we're going to be working with rural development and the food programs at USDA, the food safety programs at USDA, cooperative extension, research, our land. I mean, we're going to be working with every aspect of USDA, including Farm Service Agency, Natural Resources Conservation Service. Everybody that is delivering a USDA program is a potential collaborator here, and not just USDA. We're currently doing a large Future of Food work project in the San Joaquin Valley here that's being funded by the Economic Development Administration out of Commerce. We're also working with National Science Foundation on innovation hubs related to food technology, et cetera. It's a federal, state, local, public-private partnership is what we're looking at here.
And that's very, very ambitious. And obviously, let's hope it follows through. Now, do you imagine that there may be an unanticipated fallout once the system is running, where the state-funded programs that currently exist could be altered or even disappear as the funding from the regional food business centers is distributed?
No, actually, if anything, I serve on the state board for our Department of Food and Agriculture, and we just had our board meeting this morning. We're discussing about how we can not just utilize existing state funding, but help grow it once we identify where there are needs or gaps that need to be filled. So no, I don't anticipate that at all, at least not here. I can't speak for every state. But, you know, I think nationally, we all know we have got to have resilient and productive and efficient food systems. You know, it's not that long ago, March of 2020, when the COVID pandemic first hit us, we saw empty grocery stores at the same time farmers were dumping milk and plowing under perfectly good crops because our food distribution systems and supply chains weren't as resilient or flexible as they clearly need to be.
Yeah, that's a challenge that a few people don't remember at this point. Now, USDA seems to intend for these two programs to work in concert to reach the agency's goals to offer new market opportunities and to potentially reduce red tape or confusion about existing USDA efforts toward these goals. Do you have any perspectives on what businesses that hope to expand or improve their operations through this program should be aware of or should consider before getting involved?
Yeah. First of all, they got to want to potentially do business different. I mean, we're trying to expand, enhance, improve food supply chains, create new markets, new ways of processing. We're trying to create aggregation hubs. We're trying to get farmer direct not only into school programs, school lunch, but hospitals, jails, other institutional purchasers. And to do that, we're going to all have to do business a little differently, and that includes the government. You know, some of this, if we've got issues with red tape that don't really make sense, we already today, we were telling some of the activists in the audience at our board meeting, we're going to need you activists to go out there and help us fix policy if we need to fix it. And I don't know what that is, but, you know, it's potential out there. And then there's also the chance to really expand some policy that people have barely started using. I just recently became aware of, you know, work that is funded through Medi-Cal in our state, and I think maybe four or five other states, where the medical professional overseeing individuals receiving Medicaid, Medi-Cal, can actually prescribe fruits and vegetables as part of their health care. And we now have a couple of businesses here who are working with local farmers, small farmers in many cases, to put together boxes that are very individually curated and designed for that particular individual's health needs. And to me, that is an amazingly huge new market for our farmers to start pursuing. And it really ties into the whole idea of food as nutrition as health. And if we can keep that spectrum growing, then we're going to eventually start reducing some of our healthcare costs. So in many ways, I think this investment we're making in better, healthier food systems is ultimately going to pay for itself with reduced healthcare and just, you know, overall better community development and jobs, et cetera.
Absolutely. And it will have an impact on food waste as well, I'm sure.
You know, that's a topic we didn't get into today, but it's a topic that has a huge amount of opportunity. As we are improving these food distribution centers and supply chains, we can at the same time be looking at the whole system, seeking to create those closed loop systems of how do we collect the food waste? How do we divide it into where it can be of the highest and best use? You know, everybody thinks of compost, that's obvious, but some like high fatty, oily type food waste can be turned into biodiesel or other products very easily. Creating those kind of systems and supply chains are going to be a real opportunity here as well.
So creative thinking will have a very big role in making this a success.
Absolutely. And not just us, the folks we work with. I've always found when I'm out in the field working with farmers or small business folks and communities too, communities that are interested in having their community thrive, they come up with some of the most amazing ideas. The challenge is just being able to get the resources or the ability to bring those ideas into reality.
Right. Well, finally, I'm going to ask you to pull out your crystal ball a little bit. Do you have any thoughts on what some of the agency's next steps might be to boost achievement on the program's goals, say in the next 5 years or so?
Well, they've made it very clear that they want us to be focusing on creating networks and systems and centers that outlive this initial grant funding. So although they haven't created the exact metrics for that right now, I would assume we're going to be seeing that in the next couple of years. And frankly, we welcome that because I and all my collaborators, my partners, we want to build something here that for the long run, not just, you know, for one grant. We want to build something that truly will leave our communities, our agricultural producers, our consumers, and everybody in between with healthy, thriving, resilient food systems. Again, not something that just is the life of this one grant. If that's all we do, then frankly, we will have failed.
Understood. Well, thanks so much for sharing your insights and expertise with our Meeting Pod listeners today, Glenda. And thanks to our sponsor, Fusion Tech, and to our listeners for tuning in this week. That's a wrap for this episode of Meeting Pod. Until next time.
Remember to tune in on Mondays to get the inside track on the people and the processes that drive the protein industry. Be sure to subscribe to Meeting Pod on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Follow Meeting Place and Alt Meat magazines on social media, and be sure to visit our websites at meetingplace.com and altmeat.net.